Recorded live on the Fireside app, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and ever try to wrangle a rattlesnake? It makes your heart beat faster just thinking about it, doesn't it? On today's show, let's work on throttling those emotions with your money life. Joining us from the Money You Should Ask podcast, it's Bob Wheeler. Plus, from the Afford Anything podcast, Paula Pant. And he's the guy helping us wrangle this podcast three times a week. It's OG. Oh, but it's not all emotional talk. Later, put on your thinking cap because we'll bring you our contributor trivia challenge. And now, a guy who's been working on snake charming since he was 13, it's Joe Saul Sehy.
We just started the show and we're already in the gutter. Nice job, Doug.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to, it took us like 4 minutes to get there. Welcome to the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter. That was the voice of Doug. And sitting here across the card table from me is the voice of one and only OG. How are you, man?
I am fantastico.
Yeah. Doug Artie with the snake
jokes. Long time
no talk. We just began. I know. I feel like we've been talking a lot. We talk a lot normally, but we've been talking a lot lately.
A lot. Yeah.
Yes. You got your fill. You're like, I don't need to talk to Joe for a long time. Somebody else we've been talking to a lot lately, Paula Pant from Afford Anything is here.
I sure am. And it's good to hear your voice again after having heard it for so many previous consecutive days.
Now, the cool thing, the reason we're saying this is we were all just at an industry convention called FinCon. And Paula, I'm happy to report that I only closed a bar with you once.
Exactly. We stayed out until 2 a.m. at this piano bar. One of our mutual friends rented out the entire upstairs area and we sang our hearts out for, into the morning hours.
Sweet Caroline, all the songs.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was fun. And I'm so happy he's here. He's a guy that I've been wanting to meet for a long time. He was also at FinCon with us. Bob Wheeler joins us. How are you, man?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. And I had a great time at FinCon, but this is even more fun.
Of course it is. We get to hang out again, Bob, because you and I hung out a little bit at FinCon and I laughed my head off.
I was laughing too. It is. I don't know who's funnier.
but during your day job, you do a lot of laughing. Because tell everybody part of what you do in LA.
Well, so I do two things. I do lots of tax returns because I've got a CPA practice.
And that's hilarious. That's just absolutely hilarious.
Really hilarious.
Yes.
Nobody's funnier than a CPA.
It is. And then the better part of the job is babysitting everybody over at the Comedy Store as the CFO.
Yes. Comedy Store. Never heard of it. I'm not sure what that place is.
We have a couple of people that came out of there, at top.
So that's right. Tell the three people that don't know about your awesome podcast, what you do, because talk about fun, not only fun, but you get in the, you really go deep sometimes with a lot of your guests.
Well, we do. So we talk about money and emotions. And so I like talking with highly successful people and not so highly successful people and actually checking in with childhood beliefs and the money journeys that a lot of people have, because there's so much unconscious stuff that we love to unpack. And yeah, we get pretty deep. I have people crying and laughing and wishing me bad things, but we have a lot of fun and we hold space for all of it.
Well, we got special guest Bob Wheeler here. We got Paula Pant here. We have OG. We got Doug. Let's get this conversation started. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. And now we'll get the conversation started. Let's go. The piece that we're going to be discussing today, don't worry if you don't have it in front of you, because we're going to go through it and it's not that difficult to get. It's from a site called WealthyRetirement.com. This piece was also written by Rachel Gearhart, wrote this. And the piece is called Investing Advice from a Rattlesnake Wrangler, which immediately caught me. But then when I started reading, it caught me even more, because Rachel starts off by saying every June, the tiny town of Cinnamohoning, Pennsylvania, population 132, hosts a rattlesnake hunt. Surprisingly, or perhaps not, this annual event attracts thousands of people, and awards are given for the heaviest rattlesnakes captured. This year, the biggest timber rattlesnake was 52 inches long and weighed 4 pounds, 6 ounces. She says that her dad, who grew up just a few towns over, used to tell me stories about how competitors would inject themselves with rattlesnake venom to build up a tolerance in preparation for the big hunt. But she then begins talking about investing like the rattlesnake pit. And Bob, as a special guest, I want to start with you, because you wrote a book called The Money Nerve, and investing itself inherently is super, super, super emotional, isn't it?
Well, it totally is. And I actually love that it's a rattlesnake, right? Because we get to pick our poison. I mean, it's scary, because either people are waiting till the right moment, or they're too afraid to lose their money, or they might make a mistake. Like, it's full of emotions when people are, I mean, that's what makes the stock market go up and down, right? Emotions. Yeah.
But you talk about in the introduction to your book, you dive into the fact that, I mean, your grandparents kind of tried to buy your love by giving you money. You just wanted to spend time with them. They wanted to give you money. Like, there's so much emotion just wrapped up in even saving or handing people money, gifting money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think when we're younger, we're not so aware of it. Like, when you talk about my grandparents, when I was a kid, I was like, give me all the money, I'll love you the most. Right.
Sure.
I mean, my other grandparents cried, but I didn't understand that impact. But you know, when I was at a toy store in February, and there was this kid asking his mom for a present, and she was telling him, "You're so greedy. I'm going to tell Santa Claus." And it's February. The kid was begging her, "Please, please, please don't tell Santa Claus, mom, please, please, please." Right. And so here's this 5-year-old kid traumatized for the rest of his life because he's greedy and his mom's using the bribe of, "I'm going to tell Santa Claus." And that's traumatic.
Absolutely. Paula, is emotions where we get in trouble the most when it comes to our money?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So many of the decisions that we make are based on fear or anxiety, and oftentimes they're unconscious. We don't have the thought in the moment, "I feel afraid," and most of us don't. But in these subtle hidden ways, like, that rises up. You know, that kid whose mom threatened to tell Santa on him, like, he probably acts out on that in dozens of small ways that he's not aware of now as an adult.
Yeah, it is so sad to see. It's funny. Rachel writes, "The great shutdown caused a surge in investing activities. We know a lot of people began investing last year. Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade, E-Trade, Robinhood saw the number of new accounts jump around 170% in the first quarter of 2020. In fact, they say these days young investors are the most engaged. E-Trade discovered that 54% of investors under the age of 30 check their portfolios at least once a day." Not amazing, OG, if half the people out there checking their portfolio once a day, that they're going to be a little emotional about it.
Well, and I wouldn't call that being engaged. I might call that being paranoid, perhaps. But yeah, gone are the days of set it and forget it, I guess, right? If we're now doing day trading and interday trading, I guess that would be, and option trading and all that sort of stuff. But that's a byproduct of the direction that the industry was headed with the free commissions. So, or no commissions, I guess, as it were. So you don't have any barriers to entry there now. Now you can do whatever you want to do. And she goes on to say that they're playing with rattlesnakes because they don't know what they're doing. And that's really true. When you're gambling your retirement money on the outcome of a binary activity, like an option trade or something like that, where either you will be profitable or you will have zero. That's not investing. That's playing with rattlesnakes.
Why do you think, Bob, that so many people are interested in investing now, but so few people are interested in really learning how to do it right?
Well, because you're going to get rich quick. That's what everybody's telling you. I heard so many people saying, you got to get on Robinhood. I'm making so much money. Everybody's making money. I think what happens is, especially with social media and everything, we present as if we can get from A to Z, right? That good old example. But nobody wants to do the B, C, D work in between. And I had so many clients this year didn't understand wash sales and thought they had all these losses they didn't get to take.
Oh.
Paid a lot more taxes.
Do you mind going through that? Let's get in the weeds here for a second, because OG, remember, we did a story about this, about a guy who was even, wasn't he OG? Wasn't he in the industry?
I remember the story, but I don't know that I remember the particulars about it.
I think it was a guy, Bob.
He got screwed.
Yeah, I think it was a guy who was a stock analyst, and he had made something like 700 trades, right? All these short-term trades, had no idea what a wash sale was. So he's going in and out of these positions and ended up with this monster tax bill.
Yeah. I have a client with 1.6 million of wash sales.
Oh, Lord.
And when I told him how much he owed, he almost fell off his chair.
Can you explain to everybody here how that works? Because that is something that I think we all need to know.
Yeah. So a wash sale is when you sell a stock at a loss and then you replace that stock within 30 days. And so you think you've actually captured that loss, but you haven't, because it's a wash sale. And so it gets kicked on down the pike for a bit.
Yeah. So you got to stay out of that
tax on it.
Yeah. Stay out of that stock for a little while before you get back in.
That's right. And I think the other thing that people didn't realize this year is, just because you're buying stocks doesn't make it a capital gains tax event. You have to hold it for more than a year. And so I've had clients, even that know better, they'll sell it a day short of long-term capital gain. They had no idea.
Paula, back to the broader topic of emotions and the fact that this is emotional. How did you come to terms with the fact that this is just an emotional pursuit and you got to kind of wrangle your emotions like these people finding rattlesnakes?
Well, I think, so to the question of how did I come to terms with that, when I first started writing about money and really thinking about money, I thought of it in this very dry, spreadsheet-based, academic type of manner. And it became clear to me that there was a behavior gap. There's what the spreadsheet reflects, and then there's what my actions and the actions of people around me would actually do. And all behavior is communication. So sometimes observing your own behavior and seeing the difference between what you think you should do versus what you actually do, you know, the gap between your mind and your hands, essentially the head and the hand gap, that itself is like your actions are a form of communication back to yourself that tells you there's something at play here. There's something, there's a disconnect between your head and your hands, and that disconnect is your heart.
We're going to talk tactics in the second half of this discussion, but I just want to clarify there. So are you saying that you go back then and revisit when you do something that you feel was very emotional, or do you somehow catch yourself at that time?
I guess what I'm saying is I'm sometimes unaware of my emotions, so I look to my behavior to provide cues as to what my emotions are.
Gotcha. Okay. So then I guess that's a revisiting then, because I would imagine that you come back to it later and you go, why did I mess that up?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And so then it's in hindsight that I realize, you know, often in the moment, unless you're very self-aware, it can be hard to have the conscious thought of, I feel afraid, I feel anxious, I feel XYZ. But it's in hindsight, doing that postmortem on the behavior that you took last week, that you're like, huh, I did not realize it, but I suppose I must have been feeling X.
Bob, you talk about in your book about how different investors experience different emotions. They have a different money nerve that gets tweaked, right? How do you start figuring out which where your tweak is versus somebody else's?
Yeah, well, the first thing we do is we look at people's history. We start excavating, what did mom and dad say? Just to start to a sense of how what they grew up in, whether things were possible, whether they weren't. And then I get people to start looking at what they're consciously saying, sort of what Paula's saying. If I'm always saying I'm broke, but the reality is I've got three houses and two cars and I just went to Europe, I might not be broke. I might be cash flow negative in the moment. And so we try to connect the parts where we're actually disconnected so that we can start saying, oh, I'm a fear-based person. There's never going to be enough. It's everybody else but me is going to succeed. Or I'm afraid to tell people that I don't know anything about investing, but I'm going to just pretend like I do. Worthiness, being judged, there's so many different nerves that get pinched, and just starting to be aware or ask other people to say, hey, what do you notice happens with me around money when, you know, like you never share your fries, you never pay the bill, whatever those things might be, and start clocking it.
That's interesting. Oh, gee, you got to see the same thing that Bob sees when people first walk into your office, that they might even be afraid just to talk to you about it.
Well, in the language that you use, you know, I don't want to go past this too much because both Paul and Bob have mentioned this here. The language that you use is very powerful. You know, you're the most trustworthy person that you know of. So if you say things with tons of emotion, like, I can't do this because I'm too, you know, I'm too dumb to figure this out, or I'm always broke because I'm an idiot or something like that. And you do that with so much intensity, that's what your brain will decide. Like, well, you're just too dumb. So why even bother? And that's where you get that kind of that attitude sometimes of like, well, I just can't figure it out. Well, it's because you've just conditioned yourself over and over and over again to believe that, because when you say things to yourself about yourself, what are you have to believe it, right?
Yeah.
Like you're the most trustworthy person. So I think it's important to put everything really in context and say, you know, like Bob gave the example there, you know, you're not broke. You just went to Italy. That's a different thing. You know, maybe that was a silly decision. Maybe you shouldn't have done that, but let's recognize that. Or like Paul has talked about, you know, kind of the postmortem on the back end. So I think the language that we use and kind of that self-talk is very, very, very important, especially as you're kind of getting started in the financial space.
Paula, in the FIRE movement, a lot of people are worried about optimization, right? Making the optimal move. And Karen, hanging out with us today, says paying off the mortgage is usually because of emotions. Math-wise, it's usually better to invest the money. You see, optimization versus emotion, right? And if you're going to continue to be emotional about your mortgage, should you pay it off or follow the math?
I think it depends on a couple of factors. Number one is intensity of emotion. So for some people, paying off the mortgages will only have a minimum emotional impact, whereas for others, it provides a much greater degree of emotional relief. So the magnitude of the emotional impact of the decision is one of the factors, not just for mortgage payoff, but for any type of emotionally based decisions.
Meaning, I think if you don't make that decision, it'll paralyze you. So it doesn't matter if it's optimal or not.
Meaning, if you consciously choose to make the choice that is not mathematically optimal, but that does provide emotional relief, you will get, for lack of a better way to say this, greater ROI on that emotional relief if it is intense relief rather than subdued relief.
ROI, because you can live with yourself.
Because you can live with yourself, and also because you can then redirect that mental energy, that cognitive bandwidth, to more productive activities, whether that's really kicking butt at your day job or starting a side hustle or whatever else it is that you're going to do with that freed up mental and emotional space.
Hey guys, it's that time. At this part of the show, we take a few minutes and we have our year-long competition between our three main contributors, Paula, OG, and today it's Bob. It's normally Len Penzo. Bob, would you like the good news or the bad news around this competition?
Oh, I'd love the bad news first.
The bad news is that you're going to have to go second because you're tied for first with OG, which is, by the way, the good news. So, sweet. Yes. So you and Mr. Penzo, you guys have 13. OG has 13. Paula has 11, which means Paula gets to hear what you two guess and then it comes in and is going to do a maneuver we call Chelsea Brennaning one of you because Chelsea was the first one to do it. Bob, you're about to see what this is all about. in just a minute. But all right, Doug, you ready to do some trivia?
I guess I can be ready. Sure.
I guess maybe. All right.
If that's what's required.
All right, guys, here we go. Here's today's trivia challenge.
Hey there, Stackers. It's your best friend and noted emotional support animal, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And all this talk of snake wrangling reminds me of the time I did a real service for the neighborhood. I told you this story, right? I'm probably 100. I can't believe I've never told you this story. All right, Joe, stop the music. Stop. This one's good. This is a pearl. We're going to just settle in, everybody, because, all right, so I was hanging out in the yard around dusk, as you do, with my mason jar waiting for the fireflies, and lo and behold, I see this snake in the bushes up against the house. Couldn't see it super well, but you could tell two things. It was green, and man, it was a monster. Of course, thanks to my extensive knowledge of snakes, I instantly knew this had to be the infamous Mojave Green rattlesnake. It's not really common in Texarkana, and more so in the deserts of the Southwest or, you know, Mexico, but I do know this. Just like we say about Joe's mom, you do not tango with those fangs. So get this. This thing was a whopper. I mean, it was huge. How huge was it? Again, really? Are we doing this again, Joe? God, do you guys write anything original? we just did that. Anyway, how huge was it?
How huge was it?
Thank you. It was so huge, I tried to drive my car around it and ran out of gas. How huge was it?
How huge was it?
Okay, you can stop. The snake was so huge that it and another snake go into a bar. You know, snakes speak in really thick accents, as most people know. And they're ordering, and the bartender can't understand them and says, "Are you two from Ireland?" And the snake says, "Wales." And the bartender says, "Oh, my apologies. You two whales from Ireland?" Wait. You know how big the snake was?
How big was it?
It was so huge. It was so huge. It started the alphabet with the letter O. O, B, C, D. Wait for it. Just say it a little faster. Yeah, you're getting it. Okay, all right. All right, good job catching up. Okay, this snake reminds me of today's trivia question.
Already. Yeah. Already.
I sped right to it this time. What is the longest rattlesnake on record? I'll be back with your answer as soon as you guys get done laughing at the second to last joke because it was so good. So good. Bob, I know the.
bob, I'm sure I you guys
the
need.
Comedy clubs are going to call me.
I was going to say, Bob, you guys need Doug at the comedy store, I think.
There's an opening tonight. Closed on Mondays, but there's an opening. In the room.
You're killing me, Bob.
Sorry, Doug.
All right. Well, we have our question because we're talking rattlesnakes today in the snake pit of emotions. Where do we go from there? So we're going to start with OG, the longest rattlesnake on record.
This is, I have no idea. I don't even know what to think about this. Yeah.
Nobody can hear you or see you thinking, OG. Do say something.
I'm thinking. I'm just going to throw out a number. 24 or 27 feet.
Jeez. 27 feet.
It's like an alligator. I have no flipping idea.
Isn't that a movie with Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, but I think that was an anaconda.
Right.
We're talking rattlesnakes, right? Or the longest snake ever?
There's that is a long, long snake. Bob?
The longest snake ever, and it can be any kind of snake. Any kind of snake.
No.
Oh, it's the longest rattlesnake.
Specific rattlesnake.
Bob. It was rattlesnake. Okay,
that's reel it back in.
Sorry, wait a minute. OG, did you know it was rattlesnake only?
I was kind of going with snake, but
would you like to amend your answer? In this super serious competition,
feel like I should. It's like those when they give you the three doors and this, and you pick one, and they say out of these next two, do you want to switch? You should always switch.
It'll be awesome if it ends up being 27 feet right after you switch.
Yeah. So instead of 27, what did I say, 27 feet, I'm going to say rattlesnake. I don't know that I've actually ever seen a rattlesnake. I live in Texas, which I guess is a good thing. I'm taking the hint that this is, that was way out of bounds. So I'm going to say, 9 feet instead. I'll say 9 feet instead of
9 feet.
The baller move would have just been to say, yeah, I'm sticking with 27.
Yeah, there it is. Bam.
Yeah, but
drop the mic.
Laying it out pretty thick. Like, dude, you probably should pick a new one. So,
wow, that's a pretty short snake, OG. You sure want that to be here?
Okay.
Oh, boy.
All right. Bob, what are you thinking, man?
Well, so I'm thinking that most rattlesnakes are like 4 to 5 feet. So maybe with a lot of extra food, 7 feet?
7 feet.
I know that's pushing it, but seven.
Is Bob says. So you do think that Josh has a very long snake?
Okay, move it along. Right. Move it along.
Paula.
Well, I'm going to take the upside, of course. So I'll guess 10 feet.
You don't think OG snake is long enough?
I'm really? Living longer.
Really?
And you're going where?
Well, obviously, I'm going to capture the entire upside. So my guess is 10 feet.
10 feet, not 9 feet, 1 inch.
Oh, darn it. Okay, can I amend my answer?
Well,
yes.
We pretty much coached OG into his answer. So, yeah, I think you can.
Now. I don't see why not.
Let's go with 9 feet and 1 centimeter.
You can see what pros really? We are at this, Bob. We are
mixing
very,
metric and imperial.
I'm mesmerized.
Yeah, I think Jeopardy's got nothing on us when it comes to trivia contest. But all right, they're all locked. We'd love to tell you who wins, but we don't play that way. We'll be right back. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines, but both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. OG, you started this off at 9 feet. What do you think? Well, you started off at 27 feet and then you went divided that by 3. What do you think of 9 feet?
I have no idea. I have no concept of how long they should be normally.
But Bob, you're thinking that 9 feet is way too long because you went 7.
I did. I don't like rattlesnakes aren't big. They're just mean.
Yep. And Paula, you're being mean, taking the whole upside from OG.
That's being strategic.
Yeah. Nothing mean about that. All right, Doug, you got the answer. You ready?
Oh, I've got the answer.
All right, here we go.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And there I was.
I'd yellow taped around the whole area with the snake, and the mailman, the UPS guy, Joe's mom's whole bridge club, and some of the neighbors showed up to see just how big this world record Mojave Green rattlesnake actually was.
How big was it?
It's no, we're not going there, Joe.
Sorry.
Okay. Deep breath. They saw what I saw, because it was partially buried in the dirt underneath the bushes in the front yard. Nobody knew, but like, we're talking about emotional investing here, right? You got to be careful, people. So we're all strategizing exactly how we'd work the snake out of its lair and what we do with the thing when Joe's mom just throws open the front door, marches right over, and with her two bare hands, she reaches right in and grabs the snake, which just so happens was actually disguising itself that day as a garden hose. It was doing a really good job. Okay, so this time, maybe it wasn't an actual snake, but it's a good lesson for all of you to not be too hasty. Hopefully none of our roundtable panel was too hasty with their answer, i.e. 27 feet, which was, what is the longest rattlesnake on record? The record length of this largest of the world's 33 rattlesnake species is 8 feet, 3 inches, although most adults top out at 3 feet, 6 inches. So OG is our winner with a giant asterisk next to it. Roger Maris got nothing on OG.
I wonder if OG had kept it at 27, Paula, what would you have done then?
Wow. Well, I would have had to have heard Bob's answer and then made a decision at that time as to whether I wanted to strategize somewhere in the middle or capture the high or low.
Well, thank you for walking us through that. That's the part we kind of knew.
Question.
I know. I was kind of wondering if you would have taken the top side from Bob or if you would have gone 27 and 1 inch.
I mean, there's no way to know it, without being in that moment. It's all a Monday morning quarterback hypothetical, but
Monday morning quarterback. You can see there's people at home. They're talking about that with their friends. So I'm listening to Stacking Benjamins and they're doing the trivia. I was thinking to myself, I wonder what will happen with that snake wrangling. Yeah. Good stuff. And by the way, Doug does not get paid by the hour. Even though that was the world's longest story, my friend.
It's like Len is here.
How long
almost.
Was it?
How long was it? Right. Nice job, Paula. Paula needs her own. Yeah. Second half of this show is brought to you by Magnify Money. Bob, you know what happens when you go to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money?
I hope your money magnifies.
Absolutely. you find out, that was a good one. You find out that those products you use at your brick and mortar bank every week, probably not the best in class or every day for all your financial transactions. At Magnify Money, what you'll find is that 92% of all of the online banking stuff rated head to head against that brick and mortar stuff. And you can almost always find something better. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money that tells them that we sent you, and better checking accounts, savings accounts, and more CD rates there, money market rates. Now that we've clarified and we've talked about hitting that money nerve and wrangling the snake, let's go into tactics. And Bob, I want to start with you. There's this thing, I'm sure that you've seen this. There is there's this emotional range when the stock market goes up and down. And maybe you've seen this. You buy a stock and you're optimistic, says this little chart. And then as it goes up, you get excited, you're thrilled. And then of course you're euphoric when it just hits the roof and you think that you're freaking brilliant, right?
Right.
And then as it comes down, you have a little anxiety, you go into denial, you have some fear, fear becomes desperation, desperation becomes panic, panic becomes capitulation, despondency. And you think to yourself, you're like, how could I have been so wrong? Which leads to depression. And then as it starts coming back, hope, and then relief, and then you get right back to that optimism. What's funny is when we're euphoric, that's usually the time when we have the most risk. So the time that we're up the most is when we have the most risk. And the time when we're despondent, it's at the bottom. You and I know over time that that's the time that we have the most opportunity. But how do you train yourself to work directly against your emotion? How do you get there?
Well, for a lot of people, or for me, I have to trick myself and I have to take the emotions out. Right. It's, which is hard to do, but if you can start getting conscious of, oh, here's that place where I'm going to double down because it's going to get even better, and learning to just stop and say, let me cash out, let me walk away. It's not as sexy. I think if we can learn to make it not as sexy, because that's what we're going for. We're like, I'm going for the top. I'm going for the, where it's going to hit the top. I don't want to catch it on the downward spiral. And so for me, I just have to, and I think for most of us, there's a lot of, there's a great guy that talks about this, but completely taking the emotion out of your buying and selling, which is why sometimes it's great to have somebody else, a third party, whether it's a friend or an expert, that can help you not react with your emotions.
We just saw a study that showed that. In fact, it was Magnify Money, our sponsor, that did a study, and they showed that that having somebody else actually make those trades takes it out. Well, and does this go back to the beginning then, Bob? Stop looking at it every day like over 50% of these people are doing?
That's right. That's right. If you're in it for the long haul, then you should be in it for the long haul, not every day. And I think the more you get engaged every day and you're logging on, the more you're getting amped. Whereas if you can just say, all right, once a week, I'll make sure nobody took all my money, but I'm going to just trust and not get so activated on a regular basis.
Paula, how do you work against your emotions?
So I certainly think that tactic of set it and forget it, bury your head in the sand, check in as infrequently as is reasonably possible is a fantastic one. Beyond that, writing down some of your guideposts, it doesn't have to be as specific as this is what I'm going to do with this particular stock, but writing down the benchmarks around which you will make decisions and having that written so that you can refer to that in the heat of the moment when you're like, wait a second, these are not the guidelines I gave myself. That's also a good tactic for making sure that the past cool-headed version of you is influencing the present hot-headed version of you.
Oh, gee, I love it. I think what Paula said was investment policy statement.
I like the hot-headed version of me. That's always the most successful investor is the impetuous one. That's me.
Yeah. I'm glad you clarified that, OG, because I thought Paula said the pot-headed version of me.
That's a different type of investing strategy.
That could lead to different investment decisions, couldn't
then
it?
Then he's incredibly mellow.
I'm like, man, it's cool. As long as we got Doritos and
I was going to say, just hungry. Hungry for returns.
You have to have an idea. You have to have, while you're of reasonable mind, right, the strategy for what you're going to do if things don't go your way. You know, and when it comes to investing, we all talk a big game. We all say, oh, I would totally stay the course. And I did, last year when my money went down by 30%, I was totally fine with that. And 10 years ago when it did, I was totally fine with it. And I say, okay, cool. Now I want you to pretend that you're 6 weeks from retirement and it happens and you've accumulated all your money. You're ready to go. And then it happens because some people were faced with that decision in February or March or April of 2020, right? It's great when you're accumulating. We can all drink the Kool-Aid and say, oh, I would love to have the market pull back 25%. By the way, nobody actually wants that. But okay, fine. You think you will. And that's great. So you can do that. But what happens when you have five times the money? Because this will also happen when you're 60 and when you're 80. So having written down in advance what you're going to do when things don't go your way, I think is super important.
Paul, I want to go back to the other side of emotions, which is not emotions around not having enough money, but emotions that you see with optimizers all the time, thinking, I'll start having some fun in my life when I get a little bit more, right? Like, how do you actually get emotionally out there to begin loosening the purse strings and spending some money? Like, I think there's a significant part of people that listen to podcasts about money that fall into this trap.
Right. It's they're conflating the notion of delayed gratification with deferring happiness.
Right.
And those are two incredibly different concepts.
Walk us through it then. How do you break through that barrier?
How do you untangle those? I think if you're deferring happiness, it could point to some avoidance of present unhappiness. It's so easy to think, I will be happy in the future because things are not going well in the present. And it's easy to talk that up to some financial goal and point to that as the scapegoat. So facing head on, rather than avoiding, the thing that is leading to dissatisfaction in this moment, and that can sometimes be a very painful process because there may be some significant underlying things that are pointing to that present unhappiness. That would be the way to solve the problem. It's ultimately not a money problem.
No, dig in, get into the psychology.
Yeah, it's an avoidance problem.
Bob, you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like I have multiple conversations with some of my clients to get them to start to feel comfortable about shifting their position of, wait, you mean I could have a little bit of happiness now? And I don't have to hold all of it until I'm 90? Because it's scary. It's scary to let go of our story. And, you know, for me, I do a lot of cost-benefit analysis conversations with people. What's it costing you emotionally? And what's it cost, you know, what's the benefit emotionally? So that they can start to say, well, okay, maybe I'll spend a little bit. I have a client in his 80s. He just sold a house, got $500,000 profit. He's got $1.5 million in the bank. He ended up not having to pay any tax because of a tax basis that he didn't realize he had. He won't even go out and spend $20,000 to renovate his house because he's like, he might need it. He's in his 80s. He's got $2 million and he's afraid to spend a dollar.
That's what, you know, what's funny, Bob, is that I hear you. And I was going to say, while you and Paula were talking, that I thought this was a math issue. Like, they don't believe the math. So you kind of clarify the math, but that's beyond math.
That's right. I mean, initially it was math because several times I said, this is what you owe in tax. And he's like, let me pay in $100,000 to cover it. I'm like, you don't owe it. I eventually let him pay in half of it just so he'd feel better. Like, to what Paula was saying, sometimes the emotional, consoling is I let him pay half of the tax that I know he's going to get back, but he still can't let go of the fact that he's got all this money and that he's actually allowed to enjoy it.
So how are you? Are you breaking through? Is there a way to break through? Do you know how to break through?
Well, with him, I asked him, I said, what's three things you really, really want to do? He said, well, I really, really want to get some new appliances for the house. I really want to go to Vegas and spend $1,000 on one, just like put it on the wheel and maybe get a new car. So I said, look, you got $500,000, $50,000. You can do whatever you want with it. And I'm going to call you every month to see if you spent your $50,000. And he sort of laughed and he's like, really? I could spend $50,000? I'm like, well, you could spend more, but I'm going to make you spend $50,000. And then he was like, okay, well, Bob's telling me I have to spend the $50,000. So I guess I'll go spend some money in Vegas and take a trip and fix up my house.
You're setting up like a Brewster's Millions situation. I don't know if that reference is too old. Paula has no idea what Brewster's Millions is.
I have no idea. I'll watch it while I'm drinking Bartles and James.
Fantastic movie.
Bob, but that's what you're setting up. It's a situation, yeah. Paula, where this person Richard Pryor had to spend lots and lots and lots of money. But you're giving him some permission to start small.
That's right. And I think it's amazing how many people think they need somebody else's permission to spend their own money or have happiness.
Oh, gee, I want to ask you the other side of this, which is, you know, as well as anyone, the risk management side of this, right? Looking at our own mortality, looking at the fact that we might get disabled, all those things, like those might be very difficult for us. How do you get around those emotional discussions that nobody really wants to have?
Well, I mean, I think recognizing that if you don't have a plan, there's one already for you when you're thinking about, you know, estate planning or something like that. When you start thinking about your own mortality, it can sound a little frightening. It can sound a little frustrating. But if you consider it from the perspective of the people that are left to sort it out, imagine how frustrating it'll be for the other people if they don't have a list of where all your money is. Imagine how frustrating it would be for you if someone that you cared about said, oh, hey, by the way, you're in charge of all my stuff if I get hit by a bus, and I'm not going to tell you where any of it is. So good luck. Also, don't screw it up, please. You know, like, how frustrating would that be? Or if you're, you know, thinking about your spouse or loved ones, and think about the outcome if you're not able to provide long-term financial support. That's going to help shape that. I think that initial feeling of, okay, I've got to solve this and take the emotion out of it and say, okay, this is a decision that needs to be made just from being a reasonable human being.
Just, you know, a practical standpoint.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it. It might as well be me, type of thing. And, That's a good way to think about life insurance. Somebody's got to buy it. Might as well be.
but that's interesting. What OG's saying, Bob, is that it sounds like sometimes getting your ego out of the way and thinking about other people's emotions as well kind of gets rid of your money nerve.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. The thing is, we're so in our ego that we actually don't realize there are other people around us sometimes to even worry about the impact on them. And they also sometimes, like, I'm working on a couple of trusts where the people thought they did all the right things, and now that they're gone, they didn't. And we're trying to unwind stuff that they were so assured that they had everything done right, and they didn't. So even unintentionally, it left a mess. So plan your estates, people, plan them.
Yeah. Paula, was that difficult for you, the whole risk management discussion?
Risk management, estate planning, I think the fortunate thing about being a podcaster in this space, and I realize this advice does not apply to anyone who's listening to this, or hardly anyone, but I think being a podcaster is a easy way, not an easy way, but it provides an on-ramp to such discussions in a way that I think trips a lot of other people up, because how do you begin that conversation?
No, but I think what you're saying is that you're having this discussion all the time, so it's easier. So the thing that you have to realize, if you're listening to this and you're not a podcaster, which would be almost everybody, is that you just have to kind of ease into the discussion, have it more often, and you start making these decisions.
Or become a podcaster.
Yeah. Yes.
That's easier.
Yes. Because we make all the money, right, Paula?
All of it. So much. Just rolling in it. Joe Rogan style.
That's right. Yeah. Bob, how much are you selling your podcast for?
$240 million, I think. That's the asking price, but I'm open to negotiation.
That's good. might take a slightly smaller sum.
Yeah, I might.
That is interesting, though, Paula. I mean, it sounds like surround sound is a little bit of controlling your emotions, too, like getting around the right people.
I mean, I think so. Well, I think a lot of... you know, fear comes from uncertainty. It comes from not knowing, and lack of exposure can certainly, you know, intensify that sense of uncertainty. So sometimes just repeated exposure to the same topics, to the uncomfortable conversations, can make it feel more familiar.
Let me ask you, emotionally, what's the hardest piece of managing your money? Bob, you wrote this book, The Money Nerve. What gets on your money nerve?
Well, you know, the thing that still gets me, and I hate to admit this, even though I know better, I still have a little bit of that scarcity mindset, right? And I'm aware that if I don't keep myself in check, I'll still go into, wait, there's not enough. I need a little bit more, and then a little bit more. If I just had another 100,000 or whatever, 20,000, whatever that number is, there's that place in me that's always has a little bit of fear that, like, I always check the refrigerator and all the pantries to make sure we're going to be able to eat for the next month, just so I can feel calm.
Yeah.
And I fight it.
And how do you fight it?
Well, then I check in with reality. I ask myself, is this a story? Is it true? And then I'm like, it's not really true. Or, you know, the reality check is really helpful, because sometimes I'll be sitting there talking to a client and I see how much money they're making, and I'm like, wow, they have two houses. And oh my God, and then I realize, yeah, I have that, but I discount it for myself, right? I see it in other people, but I don't see it in myself.
You discount it the same way everybody else does, which gets back to having some objective people around you, like you said earlier, good friend, advisor, whatever it might be. OG, what do you struggle with emotionally?
Yeah, because emotions are the things that I have struggled with. That's me, Mr. Emotion.
Oh, you know you do.
I think probably as I was listening to Bob talk for a second, I was thinking, yeah, I'm exactly the opposite of that.
I will verify that.
I'm like,
OG is one emotion.
I was like, is there enough food in the pantry? And I'm like, meh. We'll figure it out.
We can always have more.
More is correct. No, I think that, I think literally probably the other side of it. I mean, because I have such the opposite side of the feeling of that in terms of the unlimited pie mentality, right? Of like, yeah, there's always more, that that sometimes I've been, you know, I've been guilty of getting caught with my hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, from time to time. Like, ooh, that was a little overextended there.
Yeah,
for
I think yours is kind of more around, will this thing actually really make me happy, is kind of what you struggle with, I feel like.
Well, it turns out it does. So just a smidge more and I will be happy, I can tell.
Most of the things make OG happy.
I'll let you know, but I'm pretty confident.
Just more baubles for the king. Just
more. Did you say more bubbles?
I was baubles. Thinking
more baubles.
B-A-U-B.
Oh, that's look it up. Word is way too highbrow for me. Dial it back. I thought you said bubbles, and I was thinking, I could use more bubbles in the champagne.
Yeah, more bubbles in the bubble bath. Oh, no.
Or in the champagne.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Paula, emotionally?
I can't believe you both missed the joke about the economy is in a bubble.
We did. It just goes, nerds. Just goes right over.
Emotionally, I'd say that my burden to bear is overwhelm followed by avoidance. So there's no end to how complex a plan can become. And when something is not simple enough, when it becomes increasingly complex, I start to get overwhelmed by it. And then that overwhelm eventually leads me to just avoid it entirely. And so that overwhelm, the emotion of overwhelm followed by the behavior of avoidance is probably the thing that I struggle with the most.
So how do you fight that?
Geez, I don't know if I do.
Yeah.
I suppose at a certain point, I get fed up with myself enough that I make the decision to like drastically simplify and dial everything back to the basics, really embrace the done is better than perfect 80-20 philosophy, get away from the tendency towards complexity and over-optimization, and yep, just go back to, all right, what are the fewer but more key things that I need to do? Do just those things, ignore the rest.
That's me to a T. I have to be vigilant about things. And I don't know, just keep reminding myself every quarter, mm-hmm, of where I'm at. All right, that's going to do it for today, everybody. Let's find out what's happening at our contributors' houses, what they're doing. OG, what do you got going on this weekend, man?
A whole lot of nothing.
Oh, that's so great.
Another weekend in a row of nothing, so I'm excited about that.
Absolutely. Those are my favorite weekends. Paula Pant, thanks for hanging out with us again, as usual. What's going on at Afford Anything?
On the Afford Anything podcast, we have Ryan Holiday. He is famous for writing about Stoicism, the Stoic philosophy. He wrote some fairly famous books like The Obstacle is the Way and Ego is the Enemy.
I think this would have been funny if you said that like really stoically, if you said it like really kind of monotone.
The ego is the enemy.
There you go. There's some Ryan Holiday right there.
So he just published a new book. It's called Courage is Calling. And I interview him on the Afford Anything podcast about concepts like courage, bravery, valor, as well as concepts like recklessness, cowardice, and how we can recognize those notions, those concepts in our day-to-day lives.
Did you ask him about rattlesnakes?
I did not. We did not cover that. But what we talk about could be applied to rattlesnake wrangling.
Very much. Some courage going on there. And that's at the Afford Anything podcast, available
everywhere where finer podcasts are downloaded. Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen to your favorite shows.
There it is. Bob Wheeler, I am so excited that we got to meet my friend. And oh my God, did we have fun at FinCon and again today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Hey, it's been a blast. I enjoyed it. I really did. I'm still laughing from the weekend. So.
So me too, actually. So what's coming up on the show? Tell everybody about what's coming up next.
Well, so we just released this amazing interview with Stack and Benjamin's own Joe Saul Sehy.
Oh, what a cool dude that was.
That was amazing. And then we've got Chelsea Norton that we also interviewed at FinCon, who is part of NEFI, which is the National Endowment for financial education. So getting those out and got a few more interviews going. And then I've just started working on a children's book series around financial literacy.
Oh, so, cool. Getting people started at a young age.
Start them young.
That is so awesome. Well, we got to have you back on to talk about that when that gets rolling out.
Absolutely.
And you also have a book, The Money Nerve, but the podcast is Money You Should Ask. What a great name. And that's also like Afford Anything available everywhere.
Available everywhere. And we have a lot of fun. It gets deep and we have a lot of tears and it's all about money and emotions and we all have them.
Well, hopefully, Bob, the only tears going on now from people is that it's ending. So here we go. Doug, what should we have learned today, man?
Well, Joe, I'll tell everybody what they should have learned today. First, just like snake wranglers, keep your emotions even keel when investing and saving. Money is inherently emotional. So at the very least, run your big decisions by some unemotional, money-savvy friends to make better decisions. Second, choose the words you use carefully to condition your thoughts about money in a more positive way. For example, like Bob Wheeler says, you're not broke, you're just cash flow negative. Sounds way cooler. But the big lesson? Sometimes you got to be cautious, and sometimes you just need to grab the snake with both hands. That's not at all.
No.
That came up.
No,
came up
bad, wrong. Bad, 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 bad.
I'm sorry. To hear more from Bob Wheeler, check out his podcast, Money You Should Ask. Oh, wait, I just got it. Money You Should Ask. Funny. I got it. I get it. Okay. All right. You should check out his podcast wherever finer podcasts are found and check out his book, The Money Nerve, on Amazon. For more Paula Pant, just tune into the Afford Anything podcast wherever finer podcasts like Bob's are distributed. That's it, Joe. I'm done. It's over.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show. And I thought we would talk a little bit about maybe run-ins with snakes that you've had. My spouse Cheryl is very afraid of snakes, and we've got tons of them here in Texarkana. We were running down a trail last fall, about a year ago, and we're running along with a friend of ours, and this guy we're running with stops right after Cheryl steps across this, what looks like just a small stick, and he picks it up and he throws it. And Cheryl's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Well, you almost stepped on that snake." And not good. I had another friend who was out working in a pasture and the weeds were really long. And all of a sudden he feels through his boot, he feels this just grab. And he knows immediately what's happened. He knows that, that he's been bit. And it turns out he was bit by a venomous snake. I don't remember which kind of snake, but everything he starts to feel like, he said, an elephant sitting on his chest. And as they're rushing him into the emergency room, he gets to the emergency room. And they say, "Okay, we're going to de-thaw. We're gonna de-thaw the anti-venom." He's like, "Really? Yeah, not
isn't
good.
It just thaw?
I think de-thawing is freezing.
De-thaw. I'm gonna unthaw.
Is it like
I'm gonna re-thaw? It? Yeah, that's a good
thawing.
Point.
It's just thawing.
Yeah, he's got. They have to thaw. Good catch." Paula, lots of snakes in Cincinnati growing up?
I do remember a snake in the backyard that my parents, unfortunately, I have this vivid childhood memory of my parents killing a snake that was just innocently in our little backyard.
Just hanging out, doing nothing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Which now that I'm older and I know more about snakes, that, you know, I'm very sad to think about that. Yeah. And of course, like there's some snakes that are venomous and some that are not, some that will, that are merely the strangulous type.
Yeah.
They'll strangle you, but they won't, you know, they're not venomous.
I know some people like that.
Yeah. Same
thing. Oh, gee. Oh, wow. I got personal in a hurry.
Sorry, there's something caught in my...
That escalated fast. You know, but I really like snakes. I think snakes are cool. I have gone to, like, shows where the performer has got a bunch of snakes wrapped around his neck, and he calls up.
That. Let's just take all the time we need to unpack Paula's fascination with snakes. We got time.
Great.
Go.
Great. So I was in Australia this one time, and I was watching some type of performance. I was in Northern Australia, like right around Darwin. And there's this performer who had a bunch of snakes wrapped around his neck, and he was like, I need a volunteer for the audience. And my hand shoots up, and I'm like, me! And so he calls me up to the stage, and he drapes this gigantic snake around me. And I'm totally cool because, like, the air conditioning is blasting. And so I know that because snakes are warm-blooded, like, they're keeping the room intentionally very, very cold.
So the snake doesn't eat you.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, this is great. As long as they keep the air conditioning blasting, like, the snake is super mellow. I'm chill. So yeah, it was a great little show. And then as a reward for being the volunteer who took the stage, he gave me free tickets to this boat ride where you got to see crocodiles leap out of the water and eat raw meat on a fishing pole. So we got to do that the next day. So yeah, it was fantastic. Just a great reptile trip.
Snakes are the key to my whole life. I love snakes.
I am terrified of Paula now.
That's right. Bob or OG, snakes?
So my snake story is I grew up in Tennessee, which is why I'm happy to be in California because they don't have water moccasins anymore.
Oh.
So we used to swim. We lived by a river. So my friends were all like, let's swim the river. And it's a good sized river. We swam the river. And as we get to the other side, we see about 20, 30 water moccasins sunning themselves because they've just had all their babies and there's just lots of snakes. So I pretty much jump over the rock out of the water because I'm completely terrified. And everybody else jumped in and swam back. And I'm like, go get a freaking boat
because
I'm not in the water. And I sat there for 2 hours while they went and got the boat because I was not getting back in the river.
You're swimming along and your buddy water moccasin swimming alongside you. Hey, Bob.
We're aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw we live. There's a beautiful river that's actually, it's based on the number of houses around it, one of the most remote rivers in the lower 48 in Arkansas. And it's called the Cassatot River, which is the local indigenous tribe. Cassatot means skull crusher. So it's Skull Crusher River because of all the rocks and the waterfalls. But I remember looking into this river, and Bob, to your point, I think I saw 5 or 6 water moccasins just all over the place.
Yeah, freaking scary. They're ugly.
Yeah. Doug?
Oh, yeah, actually, funny you should ask. I actually have 2 rattlesnake stories.
Because who would have one?
One's not enough. Never you come, is.
Doug goes to every party with at least 2 rattlesnake stories.
And since this is the after show that nobody ever listens to, we'll get a little personal. What many people might not know is that neighbor Doug there's a neighbor Doug wife. And when Mrs. Neighbor Doug was pregnant with our oldest, she's from the desert Southwest. We're there visiting her mom and she's like 7.5 months pregnant. And I can't stand to go to these amazing places. We're in the mountains outside of Tucson. I can't stand to go to these amazing places and not like get out there and be part of the amazing scenery and the nature. So I'm like, we got to go for a walk.
I thought that was going to be the end of that sentence. I'm sorry. When you're like, I can't stand to go to these amazing places.
Yeah. They can't stand to have me. So we go out for a walk and she's like dragging her heels the whole time. I'm like, let's go for a walk. So we're out walking through Sabino Canyon and all of a sudden you just hear that noise. And even if you've never heard that noise before, you know exactly, like the animal inside of you, that primate that's deep inside of you knows that rattlesnake noise. And sure enough, what could have easily been a snow tire curl, I mean, it was huge. It was like the one in the fabled story in the trivia we just told. It was a huge rattlesnake curled up under the bush, and we would have walked within about, well, let's just say striking distance of this thing. And Mrs. Neighbor Doug still just gives me so much grief about this. You could have killed our baby. I mean, it's unbelievable. Sweetheart, it never happened. But it's, as far as she's concerned, it's like when they have a dream and you were the bad guy in the dream, or you said something wrong and you're in trouble in the morning.
It's still you.
Just a dream. Yeah, that's that. And then it happened again, actually, up in Canada. I was out hiking and heard Massasauga rattler, which is a tiny little rattlesnake. It's not very big, maybe 18 inches long at the most. And it was very close, heard the rattling, could not see it. Person I was hiking with saw it very clearly. I could not see it. Ended up just taking a picture in the general area and had to zoom in. And the point of this story is how incredible their camouflage is.
Because
I didn't realize how close I was to that snake. And it took me taking a picture and zooming in on it to discern it from the leaves and twigs around it. So pretty amazing. It would have been easy for me to have stepped on this thing.
Oh, gee, you got one? Or are we done?
I would kill every snake that I saw. So
so take that, Paula.
Don't do that. Just mail the snake to me.
I
won't even go to the snake exhibit at the zoo.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who was in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam, one served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers, who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it, because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.